the two members of the Standing Advisory Committee on Company Law, Judge Wadley, and the Chairman. Thank you for the presence. Without delay, we are running about 20 minutes late, and the Minister has to rush off. So without delay, I would invite the Minister to address you on the three pieces of legislation, the Competition Amendment Bill, the Consumer Protection Bill, and the Companies Amendment Bill. Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you very much, Bugani. His name is Bugani. He didn't introduce himself. Yes, and thank you very much to all of you, ladies and gentlemen of the media. You may be wondering why we called this a press briefing.
We certainly are.
I think that one of the important reasons we call this press briefing. It's the fact that from this very intense period and very intense processes that we have been engaged in the parliamentary process, in the public consultation process, we have finally had these three pieces of legislation adopted by Parliament. And so as Parliament rose at the end of last week, for us it also marked a very important achievement, which was the completion of the processes that relate to these three important pieces of legislation that relate to really strengthening the South African regulatory environment as it relates to issues of competition, issues of consumer protection, but perhaps most importantly, the overhaul of company legislation. And the second reason is the two people sitting over there. Judge Lucy Mailula and her deputy, Judge Wadley, are respectively chair and deputy chair of the Standing Advisory Committee on Company Law, who perhaps away from the eye of yourselves in these intense processes that I was talking about, we're actually doing very, very important work for us in advising us and doing the research for us, and because this is a process that has actually unfolded over a 5-year period, and a lot of it involved, you know, quite a lot of research and putting together. I mean, the first document that we put out, if I'm correct, was the Company Law for the 21st Century, which essentially framed the work that we subsequently undertook in drafting the actual legislation. So I thought it important to also recognize and acknowledge the work that has been done by the Standing Advisory Committee on Company Law. We're having a meeting later on today, and when I went through the agenda, I saw, Chair, that it was going to be your 100th meeting as the advisory council. So I that's the second reason I thought, you know, it's important. Of course, we have here other people that have also been involved with other pieces of the conversation. And so really, these are the two essential reasons. We thought, you know, it's important to draw the attention of the public, of the media, to the fact that these pieces of legislation that have been in gestation and being processed in Parliament have actually been adopted by Parliament. These are important, as I said, in improving the regulatory environment, which is conducive to productive economic activity, while at the same time encouraging competitiveness through competition. The purpose of the Competition Amendment Bill, for example, is to strengthen the existing provisions of the competition legislation in fighting collusion and cartels, which undermine competition and competitiveness, especially as that relates to downstream industries. Now, with the competition amendment legislation, you would be aware that as opposed to the Companies Bill and the Consumer Protection Bill, where we came with completely new legislation, very extensive legislation. But here, we really sought to strengthen the provisions of existing competition law. Based on almost 10 years of experience of the existence of company competition legislation and the existence of the institution, the Competition Authority Commission, as well as the Competition Tribunal. And so the work we did here really evaluated that experience, identified areas that needed to be strengthened in that legislation, and that's what we sought to do. And of course, because of the nature of this legislation, it was as intensely engaged with and debated as the other two very big pieces of legislation, even though it was really minor amendments to the legislation. And of course, the competition legislation introduces criminal sanctions against individuals who are found guilty of causing a firm to engage in these bad practices, such as price fixing, output restriction, market allocation, and collusive tendering. And in terms of these criminal sanctions, an individual may face up to 10 years imprisonment or pay a fine of R500,000 or both. Severe penalty serves as a signal that cartel activities will not be tolerated, and those involved in this harmful practice will be severely punished. The bill also improves on market inquiry provisions, which allow the Competition Commission to proactively, not reactively, proactively, on its own initiative, investigate markets and increase market transparency by inquiring on impediments to competition which results in consumer harm. And so where the authorities may observe a certain trend that may suggest that the outcomes from the behavior of the firms in a particular sector, and those would tend to be sectors where you've got very few firms there that are operating in that sector, they may go in and conduct a market inquiry and with a view to establishing why is it that we are seeing these anti or uncompetitive outcomes in this particular sector. The bill also improves the interface between competition law and policy and sector regulation. So you would know, for example, that while we have competition law and we have the competition authority, but there are also sector regulators such as ICASA, for example, that would regulate the telecommunications industry, but at the same time deals with issues of competition in that sector. And so we sought to correct an anomaly that had arisen in the course of the drafting of the legislation in the telecommunications sector, which effectively made competition law subject to that legislation for the telecommunications sector. But beyond correcting that, we sought to achieve a better understanding, you know, about the interface and the interrelationship between the competition law, which is the primary law on issues of competition in the country, and sector regulators to the extent that they also deal with issues of competition. So we've cured that. It was a collaborative process. We did not just impose it. And we think that we've been able to find a proper balance that would ensure that we've got an optimal dispensation for dealing with issues of competition in the South African environment. And so there is demarcation of distinct responsibilities, and there is a framework for sound cooperation between these entities. This will remove unnecessary regulatory burden and uncertainty while ensuring better functioning of our market. The measure adopted in this amendment legislation, I think, are a signal of government commitment to promoting effective competition policy as part of our overall economic and regulatory framework, which should work along with other policies such as industrial and trade policy. We also seek to promote better private sector market governance through promoting greater compliance with the law and adoption of sound business ethics. And of course, for effective implementation of policy and law, it's important to continuously monitor the compliance and provide adequate resources for enforcement. And so part of what we're going to be doing is to strengthen the capacity of the competition authority in resource terms, because you know that this is a very technical area at times. It requires specialized people. So part of what we're going to be doing is really to beef up the capacity of the competition authorities. You would have seen already that the competition authorities have been very active, and it could be said fairly aggressive the more recently. And that is a reflection, I think, of both the maturing of these agencies, because I mean these are new entities which emerged with the emergence of this legislation that happens now. So it's both a reflection of the maturing of these entities, but also I think they reflect the continuing challenge of competition in the second piece of legislation, which is the Consumer Protection Bill, which is a totally new piece of legislation that, out of a whole variety of different pieces of legislation that existed, that each regulated issues around consumers, harmful business practices, and a number of other pieces of legislation, we have come up with a comprehensive piece of legislation, which in a sense is the comprehensive framework of reference for the entire economy around issues of consumer protection. And so here too, where there are sectors, you know, for example, that in finance there are various pieces of legislation that would relate to security, insurance products, unit trust, and so on, which pieces of legislation also deal with issues of consumer protection. and so the interface between these and those, it can be twofold. Where a piece of legislation in a particular sector adequately addresses the issues of consumer protection in that sector, in line with this particular legislation, that they could be exempted from the provisions of this legislation. But also, I think what is important is to ensure that this is the primary legislation, and to the extent, therefore, that you may have a legislation that exists that deals with issues of consumer protection in particular sectors, which, because they came into existence before this primary legislation that we are now introducing, and they would have to undergo some process of alignment. But for everybody, this is really the primary legislation around issues of consumer protection. Again, this supports and strengthens the culture of consumer rights and responsibilities, whilst through the measures adopted in this legislation, it is to promote fair, efficient, and transparent market a fair, efficient and transparent marketplace for consumers and businesses. The primary purpose of the bill is to prevent consumer harm and enhance economic welfare of consumers in South Africa. To achieve this, the bill adopts a rights-based approach aimed at respecting consumer rights when transacting with suppliers. And this is an approach that is internationally recognized and is based on a United Nations, on UN-adopted consumer rights. These include the right to product safety and quality, the right to fair and just contract terms, the right to cancel consumer agreements and long-term contracts, the right to buy bundled goods separately, the right to receive documents that are written in plain and understandable language, enhancing consumer choice by requiring disclosure and information with regards to prices, as well as the right to refund and warranties. The bill provides for a system of product liability where any producer, distributor or supplier would be liable for any damage in the form of death, injury, loss or damage to property and economic loss to the consumer or third party. And of course, this was one of the most contentious issues in the public consultation process, as well as the parliamentary process, with the businesses in particular very concerned about this question of liability for products that are unsafe or that lead to harm, damage, injury. So it was, but we, in the end, we really had to adopt a position that will ensure that businesses pay greater attention to procuring goods which they will further distribute to make it profitable. So in the end, I think that is the position that we took. The bill also promotes consumer activism by providing for the accreditation of consumer groups, for lodging complaints on behalf of consumers, and provide for possible financial support for activities such as consumer advice, education, publications, research, and alternative dispute resolution through mediation or conciliation. It also provides for the establishment of the National Consumer Commission and to investigate consumer complaints, whilst the National Consumer Tribunal will adjudicate violations of the consumer protection legislation. Of course, the courts will remain to adjudicate contractual matters and confirm consent orders concluded with suppliers. Consumers drive competitiveness and economic growth. And so well-informed consumers stimulate innovation, better quality products and services, as well as competitive prices. So as we embark on a campaign to educate consumers about the rights afforded by this legislation, it is important that we equally raise awareness on the responsibilities that consumers have for effective implementation of this legislation. This aspect complements the principles of the competition legislation or competition policy, which is also concerned with promoting efficiency and competitiveness of our market. The final piece of legislation is, of course, the companies legislation, which essentially overhauls the Company Act of 1973 as we have had it. It's, as I said earlier, a period that has unfolded over a period of 5 years, and it really represents a complete departure in terms of its own philosophy from the previous legislation that we have had. The need for this review of the company law as we had it was necessitated by the fact that over time it became outdated and did not keep up with the changes that were taking place in the world. Globalization as well as the advent of democracy, are some of the things that the previous legislation did not catch up with or keep pace with. But of course, the latter-day scourge of company scandals involving, you know, very large companies the development also in the field of financial reporting standards, the need to ease the regulatory burden, especially for small businesses, increasing market transparency and simplification of company registration. These are some of the things that drove this complete review and complete overhaul of company legislation. And some of the major provisions of this legislation involve corporate finance and corporate governance, transparency and accountability, business rescue, which is a new development in our law, as well as the creation of institutions and agencies. I will speak briefly on each of these, but really I hope that this will, you know, afford an opportunity for even the judges to engage with you on some of the work that they themselves are doing. But on corporate governance and financial governance, all companies, large and small, in terms of this legislation, will be required to prepare annual financial statements, and this should be so to encourage sound financial management, to ensure sustainability of companies of all sizes, and to comply with other regulatory requirements. However, the regulatory burden will be reduced by exempting certain categories of companies from having, for example, annual audited financial statements or financial statements that would have to be reviewed. And there will be differential reporting standards so that small companies will comply with less onerous standards. The Financial Reporting Standards Council, responsible for the formulation of financial standards, will consult nationally and internationally on financial reporting standards and advise the minister on those. It is also worth mentioning that the bill encourages shareholder activism. For example, shareholders appoint audit committees and subcommittees of the board. The bill also provides that demand for a meeting must be supported by 10% of voting rights. And this will enhance minority protection, as they will be able to demand convening of meetings with ease when they are agreed. To ensure sound corporate governance, common law duties of directors are incorporated in the legislation, and courts are given power to further develop jurisprudence based on the common law and tenets of this legislation. I think that previously these tended to be common law issues, but I think we significantly strengthened the dispensation that regulates the activities and behavior and conduct of directors by having in the legislation. To ensure sound corporate governance, common law duties of directors are incorporated. I've already covered this. On the issue of access to information, which is the issue of transparency that I referred to, access to information is enshrined in our constitution and the Bill of Rights. And we regard these as providing an anchor as well for the company law that we have developed. And so in interpreting and applying the bill, it must also promote that spirit and purpose of the Bill of Rights. And therefore, through this legislation, it will now be possible for trade unions, for example, to have the right of access to financial statements of the company, but only for the purposes of exercising their right for business rescue, because business rescue can be initiated even by a trade union if it believes that the situation in the company calls for that. But of course, for that purpose, they would need to access the company's financial But such access to information will be given by the commission that is going to be created. The companies and the Intellectual Property Commission, under strict conditions in order to respect business privacy and confidential information. Members of the public will also have access to company records, and in cases of disputes, the tribunal will facilitate access to these records without going to the pains of going through the court, which is costly for individuals. The business rescue process. This is, as I said, a new development in our company law, and we know that in South Africa it's a very short route to liquidation of companies. And so through this legislation we create these provisions that cater for the possibility of business rescue, so that the route is not so short. But it also balances the different interests, because I think that so far, or thus far, it tended to be the interests of the creditor. So the bill balances the different interests in the affairs of the company. There's no doubt that rescuing the company that is in financial distress is in the best interest of the company, the workers, creditors, and the economy as a whole. The purpose therefore is to be able to rescue a company before it gets to that stage of liquidation. And of course, as I was saying, that this is something that can also be initiated by a trade union, for example. The bill will also result in a crop of new professionals in the area of business rescue. It is hoped that the business rescue process will be a success as various stakeholders are involved during the consultation process. Perhaps an example that we could also refer to here is the experience that we have had with the National Credit Act, where you are sort of having dysfunction. And I think it's something that we never anticipated as we were developing the legislation. And the extent to which the debt counseling services would be required, which speaks to the question of the extent of, how overextended people are in terms of their debt obligations. And so it's one of the issues that we have had to deal with, and how we provide for these debt counseling things in a way that would be affordable for ordinary people. So already from the experience that we've had with the credit legislation, we've had to deal with this issue and find ways of how we strengthen that aspect in that environment. And of course the creation of institutions, implementation obviously is going to be a very important part of this, and so we will be involved in a process of drafting regulations that are necessary in order to enable the implementation of this legislation. But we'll also be initiating the process of migration from the institution that we have. Respect. So we are now going to be creating this company, the Intellectual Property Commission, essentially, which will be the conversion of CIPROC as we know it into that commission, with of course some of the regulatory functions that reside in the Department of Trade and Industry that will be migrated to that commission. Competition Companies Tribunal, as well as the Financial Reporting Standards Council, and these will also be formed before the bill comes into effect. So we are putting in place systems so that the implementation of the legislation will be a resounding success, and important at this important juncture when these important pieces of legislation have been adopted by the Parliament to really draw attention again to these important initiatives that were taken to strengthen the regulatory environment. I think that I should stop there, and I've brought an arsenal of very clever people with me, so I'll get them to answer all your difficult questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Minister. May I add that among that arsenal of very clever people, I have here on my desk Zodwa Ntuli. Zodwa is the head of the Corporate and Consumer Regulation Division in the DTI. So she's also available to take questions if you have any questions specific to her job. Ladies and gentlemen, could I? We're going to take questions now. Let's keep in mind the time constraints that I was talking about earlier, and handle this part of the briefing very strictly. I will take two rounds of 3 to 5 questions, depending on how many questions you've got. And get the minister and our panel to answer them. Can I just ask two things? That before you ask the question, you identify yourself first, and secondly, that we keep the questions short and concise, and so that the answerer knows what the specific question is. And one question per person. Let's not bundle up 4 questions into one long thing. So if there are any questions, we'll take them now.
Good morning. My name is Amanda Fassan from Target 24, the business section of Build. I just wanted to find out how exactly is the capacity of the competition authorities going to be beefed up? Because we see a lot of people already leaving for the private sector, with Mr. Kuneni going to Tiger Brand. And then the second question is that there have been concerns about the capacity of the competition authorities or the court to deal with the criminal sanctions that's being imposed in the legislation, and the act, which is quite complicated, and the issues being quite complicated, whether those courts will have the capacity to deal with it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yep, that's just my
name. Thank you. Moses Mlangen, SABC News. I just want to know, on the Consumer Protection Bill, to what extent is it also addressing the informal sector? Is it addressing the formal sector or also the informal sector? Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Cape Town?
It's Michael Hamlin from iNet Bridge. Could you tell us where...
Hello, I'm Cape Town.
Hello, can you hear me? It's Michael Hamlin from iNet Bridge.
Okay, I thought I saw somebody with their hand up.
Can you hear me?
All right, that's fine. And we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 questions. There's a hand in Cape Town right there.
Yes, there is. Can you not hear me?
Right, Cape Town, go on.
Can you hear me? I'm speaking.
Okay, we have a problem with the audio. Anyone help us with that issue? I will return to Cape Town in the second round of questions. We seem to be having a problem with the audio from Cape Town. So the first question was on the capacity of competition authorities from Amanda Fisher.
Well, Amanda, you know, you would probably know that in the public sector, not just the competition authority, this is an ongoing task. And we I think, constantly face this, because these are entities that, in the capacities, the technical capacities that they require, they train actually very competent people that then become, you know, sought after and struggle, I think, to keep up, you know, with the incentives that go with that. Is an ongoing one. And of course, we do have a mechanism through which we try to, as far as we can, approximate. In other words, we are quite aware of the levels of remuneration in the private sector. We can't match that, but we try, you know, as best we can to ensure that the remuneration is such that it can incentivize people to stay. I don't have a sense of what I would call an exodus of people. I think the authorities do retain important core capacities. I think that the specific individual that you've been mentioning would be something of note, precisely because, you know, someone that's been in the system for quite a while has really developed strong capabilities, and of course losing a person like that is quite a big loss, but I think the authorities do retain important core capacities. The important thing for us to do is really to ensure that on an ongoing basis, you know, we continue to strengthen those capacities. Now, I've had an interaction with the both the tribunal and the commission earlier this week, and the competition commission is looking, for example, at enhancing just in terms of the warm body personnel over the coming period to significantly strengthen its own capacity in that particular regard. So with the strengthened I think provisions of the legislation, with the continuing challenges of competition in the economy, it does become an important thing that they have to do. In our own interactions within, for example, the MTF process, the Treasury, this is an issue that we are dealing with to try and secure a greater support, financial speaking. I think I can say that we are reasonably confident that this is there.
Tom, I've never called you mother.
Stop that, say it anyway. Stop that, there you go. Hello, are you sending the sample to the bank? Are you sending the sample to the bank? Are you sending the sample to the bank?
Imagine what he's saying. Waffle.
Now, one of the things that will have to happen, obviously, is going to be developing a set of protocols, because in the legislation, you continue to have provisions for administrative action, where the competition authorities will go in there, they'll investigate and make findings. So you continue to have those, but of course you do have the provisions for criminal sanction as well. And so there would have to be a set of protocols that are developed in order to ensure that there is no there's an optimal relationship between your administrative processes and your criminal processes, where that is the route that we go. Of course, in the drafting and the consultation processes, we had to deal with you know, areas where that were deemed to potentially be unconstitutional, and we believe that we've been able to find an optimal way of addressing those issues. I think you know also that to some degree there were some differences that were there in approach to how to do this between ourselves or the department and the competition authorities. And I think that in the processes of engagement that we've had, I think we've been able to find an optimal way of addressing those differences as well. So these are ongoing engagements that are going to be there and that will assist us to ensure that the courts, you know, do find their right place and as and when necessary they have the necessary capacity and based on the understanding that we have been developed in developing these protocols with them. Zorba might want to add, I think, to this, to kind of give a better feel of that aspect of things, and you could also deal with the issue of the informal sector. I will only say around this issue of the informal sector that, you know, in the informal sector, you are actually dealing with a number of, you know, different categories of things. You would have typically in the informal sector, you know, people that buy products to own sale. But you would also have a host of activities in the informal sector, some of which actually would relate to a municipal inspection, for example. So where someone cooks, you know, some butts and something in some corner or somewhere. You know, things like those would be subject, I think, to the capacities that municipalities need to have to do the necessary inspections and ensuring that issues of health standards and safety are also there. In fact, Zorba, you may want to say something in that area of the informal sector.
Why is that? Yeah, it's lovely because the minister has covered exactly that point, so there's nothing really that I can say about that. But I think just to pick on the area of development, I think in terms of the capacity of courts to deal with competition matters, I think you'll notice that over time the field of competition law has developed extensively. And you'll recall that, in fact, when the new legislation in 1998 was enacted, there wasn't much of a specialization in that area. And today, I mean, we can proudly say that that area has developed so much in the sense that we have now young and upcoming professionals that are practicing in competition law. We've got extensive case law that has developed through practice cases that go to the tribunal, that go to the competition appeal court. So I think through cooperation as well between our competition authorities and the criminal court, I think that area has the potential to develop even beyond our imagination, and we are confident that we will be in a position to implement this legislation as we intend to do in the future. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Michael Hanlon in Cape Town.
Are you in the region up in Pretoria?
Yes.
You can hear me.
Yeah.
Good, okay. Judging from what the Minister was saying, there's still a lot to be done before these bills come into legal force. I wonder if you give me an idea of how long it's going to take before this legislation, all three bills, come into force.
Thank you. Linda.
Can I speak in a question about something else? I don't know whether the Minister could advise on whether there's going to be a significant ramp-up of industrial policy in the light of the economic situation and how industrial policy is going to align with macroeconomic policy. Thanks.
Thank you. One more.
Hi, Luandile, SABC. Okay. On the Consumer Protection Bill, or any of the other two bills, once promulgated, can the legislation be applied retrospectively?
Okay, thank you. Anyone else in Cape Town?
Yes, I have one in Cape Town.
Okay.
From Papa. Could you just give us an idea of the legislative program from here? What comes next after three schools?
Thank you.
And the final one for PayPal.
All right, one more.
Financial man. Hi, Taylor Mabang, I'm the financial man. My question for Gordon Dooley. Seeing as during the process of drafting this legislation, her team, she has lost crucial members of her team to the UCT School of Law, she lost Kungai Sibanda to ICASA. How are plans to replace those people going? Not as capacity to maintain the skills in the department. Are there plans to replace people like Kungai Sibanda in the division? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Cape Town. I think the stage that we are at now is the stage where the legislation is awaiting the president's signature. It would be my understanding that with each of these, I don't think any of these have already been assented to, because it was only last week that the processes of parliament were completed. And so really that is the next crucial step, which is the signature of the president. But of course, as a department, we are gearing up because we know the areas where we still have further work to do. There are areas where we need to develop regulations. There are areas where we need to engage with the prosecuting authority on the protocols that we need to develop and to begin to look at how we optimally arrange between the competition authority and the prosecuting authority around the criminal sanctions that would relate to the competition legislation. So we are gearing up, and we will. There are areas where we need to develop, establish the financial reporting standards council, and create institutions. So as a department, we are gearing up for that work. But obviously, it's a very crucial step to have the president's signature, so that we know that these are now laws. They stop being bills that become acts of parliament. I think, Linda, the issue that you're raising is actually an important one, even though it might not be focus of our discussion today, but I think you're raising a very important point. We are seeing this evolving economic situation, and I think that increasingly, it's making itself felt across the world. And so even as South Africa, strictly speaking, in terms of our financial institutions, not having been affected by this particular problem that affected the financial institutions in the United States and Europe and so on, even though our financial institutions haven't been, specifically affected like that, but the overall impact of the crisis is starting to be felt. And I think that the perspective that we have adopted, both in our discussions in the economic cluster, but generally, I think in our interactions, we've adopted a perspective that, as South Africa, who over time, and as you would be aware, because we report now and again on our work that we are doing in the economic cluster, we have identified the interventions that need to be made in the economy. We have identified the areas of weakness. We have set for ourselves a program to address a whole number of issues and challenges in the economy. And with this crisis that has caught up with us, we actually believe that all the more reason we have to continue to do the things that we've identified, because we believe that those are the correct things that we've got to address, And what it simply means is that to the extent that there may be financial constraints that result from this crisis, it probably means that we really have to make sure that we spend the resources that are available to us on those critical areas of intervention. The logic of this is that while living through this crisis, but being very clear about the things that we need to address in our own economy, we should work in ways that anticipate an eventual recovery that will take place, so that by the time the recovery happens, we have placed ourselves in a better position to take advantage of the opportunities that will arise when the recovery does take place. And therefore, our work on industrial policy, our work on trade policy, to the extent, for example, that we're involved in a whole range of areas where we are looking, you know, at even the tariffs that exist, you know, as to whether they are in all instances necessary. Because we also have a focus on reducing input costs for purposes of a downstream manufacturing that we would like to promote. So all of that work has to continue, and of course it will continue. I suppose, you know, the macroeconomic situation is what will determine the extent of resources that are available. But the important thing really, I think the important point to drive home is that we really have to focus our resources to ensuring that we continue to address those critical areas, so that when the recovery happens, we place ourselves in a much better position as an economy, but also as a different sectors in the economy. My knowledge of law is that you do not introduce retrospective legislation. Now, McDonald, am I correct? Yes. No, this will be legislation that will be applicable as of the date of it coming into force. I think that I have sort of given a sense of the legislative program from now on, which is really that the crucial step is that of the president's signature. Zoro?
I think Tevi would be happy to hear that the department is actually very efficient in resolving the core functions of government. And in fact, we have found a replacement for Mr. Sibanda, and that person will start effective from the 1st of December. But I think this basically what we would like to communicate is really the plans that as the Department of Trade and Industry we have in trying to recruit the best and also retain the best. And that's one thing that we are focusing on. And in fact, in the last presentation that we did in Parliament in the last few weeks on our annual report, that's one of the areas that has been emphasized in terms of retention and ensuring that we also ensure growth within the department, that we provide avenue for growth for people and be able to utilize them to contribute to the department. But yeah, over and above, I think we are efficient in ensuring that the capacity is there and ensuring that we train the capacity and that they're able to deliver on the core areas that we're dealing with. And you know, on that last note, Teddy, you'll know that as a department, we are able to get back what we lose to the private sector sometimes. And so this time around, we're sure that we'll get back what we lose to the sector regulators as well. And I think also the competition authorities, you know that sometimes people leave, but we're able to get back what we lose. But I think the positive aspect of this is that when people leave, whether going to the private sector or going to the sector regulation and all of that, what we find is that they go out there, they become competent advocates in those areas. When they come back more amplified, built up, and able to carry out the functions of the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zodwa, and thank you, Minister. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm now inclined to bring things to a close unless Donald.
I said two in Cape Town. Michael and Donald. I said two in Cape Town. Michael and Donald said.
Yes, I know that I'm up briefly from Business Report. During the process of the discussion on the company bill, there was a lot of criticism, mainly from foreign companies, that this bill would drive away foreign investment in South Africa. Do you think that the bill, in its present form, will have that effect? And if so, what is the effect?
And Michael, come in again. I just wanted to ask, to repeat my question, when do you think these bills are going to come into force? Is it going to be in the first half of next year, second half of next year, 2010? When is this process of building the institutions and doing everything else you've described going to happen?
Well, on the criticism of the legislation in the parliamentary process by foreign companies. Well, probably it will be necessary to maybe zoom in on those areas that would have been of concern to those particular foreign companies. The people who were more intensely involved in the parliamentary process might want to speak to those issues. But I think that, and again, I mean, I don't know, my view actually around this legislation that was piloted through Parliament. Firstly, you know, it's legislation that we eventually drafted after quite a lot of work that was put into looking at how company law has evolved around the world, looking at how company law has adapted to the new realities in the world. And those new realities are not just about the fact that you now have, you know, a globalized environment, but they're also part of those new realities is the fact that the issue of strengthening regulation, accountability, transparency, those are features of the new reality in the global environment. And therefore, we have modeled this legislation to the best of our understanding on the basis of really the best practices that we can find around. And so, anybody would argue that an archaic, outdated piece of legislation has got better chances of enhancing foreign direct investment as against the piece of legislation that seeks to modernize legislation, that seeks to simplify the registration processes for companies, and that seeks to strengthen, because foreign companies that operate in South Africa, I think they do want confidence. One, about the regulatory environment in South Africa, and they want confidence about the companies that they deal with in South Africa, that these are properly regulated companies that are well run and that conform to particular standards. And so I really would question a view that a piece of legislation of the nature that I'm describing and would fall short compared to an archaic piece of legislation in terms of ensuring that will give greater confidence to foreign companies about the corporate regulatory environment in South Africa. I would really question that. But you might want to speak to maybe some specific, you know, areas of concern that those companies may have referred to. And then talk to this question of the legislative process.
And?
One of the issues that obviously came up during the parliamentary process was in terms of the particularly the issue around shareholders activism and the powers of minority shareholders, who most often may be foreign investors who may want to exercise certain rights. I think the particular point that was mentioned was that in relation to the threshold that was required to be able to call a meeting, initially the bill were proposed 25%. And the criticism that came in respect of that, which was also made during the parliamentary hearing, it was presented there, was that the 25% may actually be too high and that companies will use it as a standard, as a minimum, even if the bill does not intend to make it a minimum. Because the bill specifies clearly that as much as the bill says 25%, the companies could then agree on a lower threshold in their memorandum of incorporation. So, but what the concern was that the 25%, because it's there, companies will just look at it and use it as a minimum. And in that regard, we actually reconsidered the issue and say that to the extent that this could result in that, it's definitely not the intention of the drafters of this particular piece of legislation. So in that case, then we considered revisions, which is now what you find now is that the threshold that we have is 10%, which the minister has already alluded to. And that is one area which just raised the concern in respect of foreign investors. But generally, I think, as the minister alluded on the critical aspects of this piece of legislation, that over the years, South Africa has been evaluated in terms of the ease of doing business and all of that, and also the level and extent of confidence by investors. And there were gaps that were identified in some of those studies. And one of the areas was really the regulatory burden and the length it takes, you know, how long it takes to just register a company. So all of these things are things that we are seeking to address through this piece of legislation. Simplification of the process, moving away from form and but focus more on efficiency, quick turnaround times, ensuring that companies, you know, do not get sent back, you know, when they want to register just because they don't have a piece of document or they don't have a proper name because the name has been used somewhere. So we introduce mechanisms that are going to focus more on ensuring that the process is more efficient and that businesses are able to be run in a very easy way, but also in a very sustainable way, and a way that will also give that confidence to the investors that South African companies are well regulated and they can compare to other companies in other countries internationally. Thank you very much.
Oh, the legislative problem. Okay, I think, is it in relation to when we are? Okay.
What we have in the piece of legislation that we are talking about today is that the consumer protection bill will obviously come into force. Both the consumer protection and the companies will come into force a year after being signed. But some of the aspects will then be introduced in a staggered manner in relation to the consumer protection. Some of the provisions may kick in earlier and then others will kick in then 18 months after that. So the provisions are there in the legislation, but what we expect generally is that in 2010, mid-2010, all of these pieces of legislation would then come into force. That's basically where we're at.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. I think that concludes our business for the day. May I just take this opportunity to say that the minister will tomorrow be hosting a stakeholder interaction on BEE at 9 a.m. at the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research in Pretoria East.
and the media are invited to come and listen to the minister on the outcomes of that at 12 p.m. tomorrow at the CSIR offices. So if you could see you there, or at least you could send some of your colleagues that cover issues related to BEE. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. Can we have another hour, please?